From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. March is Women's History Month, and this month doesn't share the longevity of, say, Black History Month. It wasn't until 1981 that Congress passed a resolution asking the president to proclaim one week in March as Women's History Week. Over the next 5 years, Congress passed annual resolutions designating Women's History Week. It was 1987 when the National Women's History Project petitioned Congress to establish the entire month of March as Women's History Month. And that continues today. Each year, Congress asks the president to issue a proclamation. On today's edition of Coastline, we'll explore why there's a month set aside for women's history. We'll also find out what third-wave feminism is, how it's different from the first and second waves, and how feminists might say the culture is doing in terms of moving past gender stereotypes to equality. Joining us in the studio today is the director of the Women's Studies and Resource Center at UNCW. She's also an associate professor of English. Dr. Katie Peel, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much.
So often, Dr. Peel, people hear the term feminism and it conjures up all kinds of images, radical, angry women who are man-haters and hating all things masculine, burning bras and that sort of thing. And because of that, there have been at least a couple of generations that have distanced themselves from the notion of feminism or being feminist. When you use the word feminism, what do you mean?
Thank you for that question. There's certainly been a lot of resistance. And I think part of it comes from the fact that so many people just have these misperceptions. And what I like to do when I go into a classroom, for example, is I'll ask, okay, students, how many of you might be willing to admit that you are a feminist? And in a group of 30 students, I might get maybe a good three or four. If it's a women's and gender studies class, I might get a solid four or five. And then we talk about what it means, what feminism means, and what they think it means. And, right, you know, when I say, okay, what do you imagine or what do you picture when I say there's a group of feminists down at, you know, the student union? You know, when we talk about, you know, we have this image of, you know, angry, hairy lesbians picketing something, right? Protesting because they're so very angry all the time. But when we talk about feminism today, and I'm going to be very, very reductive here, what it is simply the belief that people should be treated equally. And, you know, historically, it moved from, you know, initially it was the belief that people should be treated equally regardless of gender, right? Because that's what the issues we're focused on. But then, you know, people realized that we can't talk about justice regarding gender without taking on issues of race and class and ability and education and sexual orientation and age, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and it became more and more inclusive. So now, you know, and again, this is boiling it down a bit, but what it's all about is just the belief that people should be treated equally regardless.
So you're talking about just the general idea mm-hmm. of equality among human beings.
Yeah.
Feminism is a word that implies a certain gender, does it not?
That's what people think. That's what people think. But we've moved beyond that. I mean, some of my best friends are, you know, identify as both male and feminist, right? So feminism is, you know, this is the title of one of Bell Hooks' books, feminism is for everyone, right? You know, and if we, you know, so people do, I think you're right, people do get hung up on the name, on that particular word, and they hear woman or they hear, you know, the gender identified portion of that, and they don't realize that it's so much more.
Give us a little bit of historical context here. What was the first wave of feminism about?
Okay. First wave feminism was largely a one-issue movement, right? It kind of rallied around the issue of suffrage for women. I like to locate it as with Mary Wollstonecraft as kind of feminist number one, right? So these ideas coming out of the Enlightenment, late 18th, early 19th century, and you know she wrote The Vindication of Rights of Woman, so kind of pioneering text there, and she was. She was naughty in all sorts of ways herself, so I'm a big fan. You know, she would get in trouble for, you know, not wearing corsets and whatnot, and you know, so all that kind of good stuff. But and you know, not not coincidentally, we have the overlap between the first wave feminism and the abolitionist movement, right? So people were organizing and fighting for slaves to become free, right? And that's where we see again this idea of intersectionality. We can't be fighting for the freedom of one group of people without fighting for the freedoms of all peoples, and realizing that many slaves also identified as women, right? We can't fight for a group of women to vote when and talk only about that when we've got women who also identify as other races as well. So it's not just for white women, for example.
Was there crossover at the time between the suffragists and abolitionists?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And many people who identified as suffragists came straight out of the abolitionist movement. Frederick Douglass called himself a woman's rights man. So we've got that as well, too. But what we saw was that once with the passing of the 19th Amendment, the movement, for many reasons, fizzled a little bit, and part of that was because it had become such a so devoted to this one particular issue, an important one, of course. But that, and then and different, World War One was in the middle of that as well. So there were different historical factors.
Is it easier to organize around a single issue kind of circumstance? I mean, when you're talking about just the right to vote, is that sort of an easier drum to beat or a clearer drum than, say, general equality among all human beings?
Oh, sure. I mean, because that when we're talking about organizing, the simpler the better, the clearer the better. When you're talking about marketing and branding and getting your message out, you don't want to make it too complicated. And I think that's where we get hung up on, in particular issues.
What about the second wave of feminism? When did that arrive and what was it about?
Okay, again, not coincidentally, we've got the civil rights movement coming, in the 50s and 60s. And again, too, we have people saying, we're fighting for these rights and voting rights. But, hey, what's going on with women? We're doing all of this stuff women are still, getting shafted in many ways. So we have that coming about in the late 50s, early 60s and through the 1970s. And that's what we tend to think of, in terms of mainstream culture about feminism, like the women picketing for rights.
You say women getting shafted. And specifically, how did that manifest itself in that time?
A lot of awareness comes from, if we look at 1963, for example, saw the publication of Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique, right? So we have, and again, too, still white middle class, upper middle class. I mean, she was a Smithy. But looking at, what options women had, particularly educated women, they were going to these fabulous colleges and getting married and staying home, right, which was, purported to be the ideal, the cultural ideal. And there was this lack there. But also, just in terms of basic rights, if even what I like to use in classes too, Jennifer Baumgartner and Amy Richards, who are very much involved in third wave feminism, have a brief essay in their book Manifesta called A Day Without Feminism. And it was looking at a day, I believe, in 1973, and just the landscape of America.
A typical day in 1973.
Typical day. Mm-hmm. And they look at how it was gendered versus today. And, for example, the newspaper want ads were still divided by male jobs for men and jobs for women.
Were they really?
In 73. Women still had to ask for their husband's signatures to get a credit card, to get their own credit cards. And this is not that long ago. I mean, it sounds long ago for our students, but it's actually, within the lifetimes of many of us. In terms of women's health care, if they went in for exploratory surgery to have a lump removed, they might come out without a breast, right? They weren't necessarily asked for their consent, or maybe their husband gave consent to have that kind of surgery done. So
going back to the jobs issue, what kind of jobs were in the women's column and which jobs were in the men's?
You could probably make a good guess there. Anything domestic related, secretarial work, some teaching jobs would be in the women's column. Anything requiring more manual labor, more skilled labor would be in the men's column.
And do you know at what point that dropped off the landscape?
Oh, man. I don't know in terms of the history of journalism when that happened.
Okay. Well, we have just a couple minutes left in this segment. And when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls for people who have questions and comments about the topic. But why is it that in the 21st century, in 2015, we're still talking about equal rights for women? How does, in your view, inequality manifest itself today?
Because we're not there yet. That's why we're still, you know, because equality does not exist yet in our real lived experiences. There's still
– For example,
the gender, the wage gap, right? The disparity in pay, you know, across the board. And, you know, I checked last night and the average is women tend to make, I think, 78 cents to the man's dollar, you know. So – Until it's, you know, it's a 1-to-1 ratio, we're going to have to be talking about making rights equal.
I think we've gone up a penny then in the last year or
yes,
so.
Yes, it was 77 for a while, but 1 cent, yay! until that is no longer an issue, we have to talk about it.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Katie Peel from UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. We're talking about third wave feminism, how gender equality issues manifest in our current culture. Have you ever catcalled a woman? Do you think that women enjoy an equal playing field, or do you think we have a long way to go? Give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline.